as she said it. "You're scared to let anyone know you." She ran her other hand through his hair, down his neck, and slowly, gently, down the rigid scars on his back. "But I'm close. I know you." He tensed beneath her hands, opened his mouth to speak, and suddenly snarled as he tore himself out of her grasp, breathing hard, his eyes wild like those of a wounded, cornered animal. "You don't know anything," he shouted, and Adina took a shocked, frightened step back. "What?" he asked in a harsh voice. "You think because you've seen my scars that all of a sudden you've got me figured out, huh? Just another commoner to be pitied. Another mongrel dog that you can toss some food to and then go riding in your palanquin to one of your fancy balls and feeling good about your charity."
"That's not true," she stammered. "I know you. I know that you care about that little girl. I know that you care about..."
"No, I don't," he shouted, cutting her off. "I care about your money, and I care about being left alone. Now how about you just..."
He stopped abruptly, closing his eyes. When he opened them again, the wildness that had been there was gone. In its place was the same blank, dead stare that made Adina's skin go cold.
"You should leave," he said in a tired, hoarse voice. "I'm tired, and I'm going to get some rest. That's if I can with your chamberlain snoring like a bear in heat."
"You don't want me to leave," she said, shaking her head. "I know you don't. There's a reason why you're here. You could have left by now." He snorted in disgust.
"Just how stupid are you, lady? I'm here because you pay me. All I care about is making money and keeping breathing. You can go slumming with some other fool."
Her mouth dropped open in surprise, and she brought a hand to her chest.
"Is that what you think? Is that..."
"Forget it."
"Fine."
She turned, opened the door and stopped, her body trembling. "After you finish the job, I don't ever want to see you again." He shrugged.
"Fine with me."
She took a step and then glanced back at him. "If all you care about is money and staying alive, then what's the point? Did you ever think of that?"
"What's the point?"
Aaron started to respond, but the princess was already gone, the door slamming shut behind her. He stood there, staring at the door in silence, his chest heaving with some great emotion. After a time, the virtue started to speak.
"Aaron, mind your own damn business, Firefly," he muttered, his eyes still locked on the door. Part of him hoping that Adina would come back, part of him praying that she wouldn't.
She did not return, and eventually he walked to the small bed and slumped onto it wearily, resting his head in his hands.
"You try so hard not to care, but you do anyway.
Why? Why do you insist on living your life alone?" He took a deep breath and crossed his hands behind his head as he leaned back in the bed.
"What do you know?" he asked, suddenly more tired than he ever remembered being.
Unbidden, his mind drifted to the way Adina's lips had felt, soft and moist. And right. He pushed the thought away, angrily.
"In this world, everyone is out to take what you have," he said in a whisper, not sure if he was talking to the virtue or himself, and not caring either way.
"Better not to have anything worth taking. Better not to have anything at all."
Chapter 20.
The next morning, he walked downstairs to find the princess and the chamberlain already sitting at the bar. The tables of the common room were empty, save two old men who sat and talked in hushed whispers, hunched over their mugs of ale protectively. At the end of the counter, a young red-haired boy of no more than 15 was speaking with a pretty older woman whom Aaron suspected was Herb's wife. Adina pointedly avoided his gaze, and Grail was too busy yawning heavily and rubbing a meaty fist at his eyes to notice him walk up.
"Hey, Aaron," the innkeeper said, pausing and cleaning the bar to smile at him.
Aaron nodded at him.
"Morning, Herb," he said.
"Hey, I was wondering, are there any horses for sale in this town?" The innkeeper's brow drew down in thought for a moment.
"Not for sale, no,"
but I've got a couple of mules I use to go to the city when we need supplies. Why do you ask?
Aaron winked. I need to get to Baresh in a hurry. I hear tale of a contest where a man could win his fortune. I'll buy him from you at a fair price.
Herb shook his head.
No, you can't buy him, but I'll let you use him, sure enough. After you and your sister's kindness, it'd be my pleasure.
Aaron glanced at Adina, wondering what kindness she had shown. But she didn't meet his gaze. He turned back to the innkeeper and nodded.
All right, then.
Good, Herb said. That's settled. Now we'll just have to find someone to guide you there. That and bring my mules back, of course.
I'll do it.
They all turned to see the fiery-headed youth rush forward, nearly tripping in his haste. The boy puffed out his chest, and Aaron noted that he kept glancing at Adina, nervously as if for approval.
Great, he thought, with an inward groan. Just what I need.
Herb grunted, a hint of a smile on his face.
Peter, doesn't your pa need you on the farm?
The boy's face twisted in anger.
Not now, he don't. We can't afford seed to plant most of the fields on account of the collectors. Besides, I'll be back in less than a fortnight, and I know the way better than most. Pa sent me on supply runs to Baresh for the last 3 years running.
He flashed a quick, shy look at the princess.
I can get him there safe.
Herb grinned and winked at Aaron.
Well, it's up to you three. The boy knows the way, that's certain, and he's got a good head on his shoulders. Well, as much as a boy his age can, anyway.
The red-headed youth's chest puffed out even more at the innkeeper's words.
I don't know, Aaron began.
That would be perfect, Adina interrupted.
Thank you. Peter, was it?
She smiled at the boy, and Aaron fought back the urge to frown.
Careful, kid, he thought. I've seen that smile before. Next comes folks trying to cut your fool head off.
I'm sure, the princess continued, that we'll make it there safely with your help.
The boy's face turned a deep crimson.
Yes, ma'am.
She turned to Aaron with a smirk.
We'll let you men finish the details. Peter, would you mind showing me and my friend to the carriage?
Excuse me, miss, the boy said nervously, but it's not much of a carriage. More of a cart, really. And not very...
That'll do just fine, she interrupted sharply.
Peter nodded quickly and headed out the door, the princess behind.
Grile glanced thoughtfully between Adina's departing back and Aaron before shrugging helplessly at the sellsword and following her out.
Herb waited until the door closed, then barked a laugh.
God's help you, I think the boy's got a crush on your sister.
Aaron sighed.
So it would seem.
Tell me, the innkeeper said, his voice suddenly serious. Are you really considering entering the contest?
Why not?
Herb shook his head.
You know your business, of course. But I'd be careful, Aaron. That kind of gold will attract swordsmen and knights from all across the country. Men who have spent their entire lives training for competitions just like this. And with that kind of money on the line, they won't be pulling any punches.
The sellsword grinned.
I hope not. That wouldn't make things very interesting, would it?
Herb snorted.
You're a good man, Aaron, but you're a crazy bastard. Just make sure to be careful up there. And come back and visit us if you can. We can always use more folk like you in town.
Aaron nodded and rose from the stool.
All right, then. Thanks for letting us borrow your cart, Herb. I'll be seeing you.
He started toward the door and stopped.
Oh, and Herb?
Yeah?
I don't mean to tell you your business either, but if some men should happen through, some more strangers, and they start asking questions about me and the others, you tell them what they want to know, all right?
The innkeeper frowned.
What sort of men?
Aaron considered a moment. The sort that can ask hard. You understand?
Herb nodded, the pleasantness gone from his face.
Folks in Crace ain't real good with strangers sticking their noses where they don't belong. These people come by asking their questions. They'll get some answers. Just might not be the ones they're wanting.
Aaron shook his head.
Not these men, Herb. Trust me on this. You tell them what they want to know, and get them out of your town as quickly as you can. These aren't the kind of people you want to screw with, especially not when you have something to lose.
Promise me.
The innkeeper and his wife shared a worried glance, then both of them glanced at the door, where Aaron suspected their daughter was sleeping.
When Herb turned back to the sellsword, his face was grim.
All right, Aaron. Whatever you say.
Aaron nodded, satisfied, and left. Chapter 21 A bird whistled happily in one of the trees surrounding the road, and Aaron was barely able to resist the urge to shout at it. They'd been traveling for hours now, and his mood was steadily becoming worse. The air was frigid, much colder than he was used to, and his tattered cloak did nothing to keep it at bay. This, however, was not the reason why he could feel his temper rising. It wasn't the bouncing cart that made his back and arse ache, nor even was it Grile's constant snoring. How the man could sleep on the bumpy trip was beyond him. More than anything, he felt himself growing angry as the boy, Peter, continued to ogle Adina like she was a goddess come down from the heavens. With the amount of looks the boy kept flashing at her, it wasn't surprising that the cart managed to hit every damn rock or root sticking out of the road. Truth to tell, Aaron thought, as the boy smiled shyly at the princess again, we're lucky the bastard's managing to stay on the path at all.
Jealous? Co asked in an amused voice.
His frown grew deeper.
For her? Hardly. I'd just rather the boy spend more time worrying about getting us to Baresh in one piece than eyeing Her Highness's tits, and the way she's treating him, smiling and chatting away like they've known each other for years, isn't doing anything but encouraging him.
Uh-huh. So definitely not jealous, then.
Aaron pinched the bridge of his nose and took a deep breath. It wasn't enough that he and the Chamberlain had been stuck in the back of some turnip cart while the princess and the boy rode up front like royalty. Now he had to deal with Ko's taunts. In his time bonded with the virtue, he'd learned that all women, even ones that were floating balls of light, could be a real pain in the ass. Even if I did care about her, which I don't, I wouldn't be worried about some hick boy with a face full of acne that can't even shave yet.
I see, the virtue said, in a reasonable tone that made Aaron even angrier. They do seem to be getting along famously, though.
Aaron glanced at the front of the cart and saw that the princess was laughing, one of her hands on the boy's shoulder. For his part, Peter's ears had turned as red as his hair, and his gaze, for once, was locked on the dirt trail in front of them.
Like I care, Aaron thought back.
Suddenly the Chamberlain's snoring was more than he could bear, and he gave the man a shove with one of his boots. The man shifted in his sleep, and the deep, thunderous snores cut off.
Thank the gods for that at least, Aaron muttered, scowling,
but no sooner were the words out of his mouth than the Chamberlain's snoring started again. Aaron sighed resignedly and readjusted in a vain effort to get comfortable. It was going to be a long trip. Chapter 22 It was nearly dark by the time Peter pulled the mules to a stop on the side of the road. Aaron's muscles complained loudly from the bumpy ride, and his head ached as if it was going to split in two.
"There's a small clearing through here," the youth said. "It's not much, but we could have a fire and rest for a while if you'd like. I've used it before."
Aaron was sure the question was directed at the princess, but he'd be damned if he was going to be bounced around any more today.
"Sounds good. Lead the way."
The boy glanced at the princess, then clucked to the mules and began leading the cart into the trees. In a few minutes, they came upon the clearing he'd spoken of. Aaron winced as he stood up in the cart and stretched his aching muscles. He'd wanted to borrow Herb's mules because they'd make better time than walking, and with Belgarin's men no doubt hunting him, not to mention that crazy bastard Aster, they needed all the help they could get. But he was regretting the decision just the same. He gazed down at the sleeping Chamberlain with narrowed eyes and kicked him. This time, Grile let out a startled yelp and jerked up to a sitting position in the cart.
"What's happening?" he squeaked. "What's wrong?"
"That's a long list," Aaron said, "and we don't have the time. Now come on, you've got first watch."
"Watch?"
Grile whined, rubbing his meaty paws at his eyes.
"Is that really necessary?"
"Yes. Now move your ass." Aaron had never been this far north, and now that the sun was nearly down, he was surprised at how cold it was. The wind cut through his clothing like daggers made of frost, and he and the others hurriedly gathered wood from the nearby forest and started a fire. As they sat around warming their hands on the small blaze, they helped themselves to dried jerky and bread. The food tasted like road dust to Aaron, and he washed it down with a bottle of ale that Herb had sent with him. The ale worked wonders on his sore body, not eliminating the pains, so much as covering them over with a pleasant numbness that was beginning to spread through his limbs. "So," the princess said as they all ate, "how do you like living in the north, Peter?"
"It's good, I guess,"
the boy stammered, obviously uncomfortable with being the center of attention.
"Well, that's nice," Adina said.
There was a pause before Peter spoke again.
Maybe that's not true. It used to be good until a month ago, when Prince Elladin up and disappeared and Claudius took over. My pa says that most nobles ain't worth spit, but the prince is different. The prince actually cares about us commoners, and my pa says that as soon as he gets back from wherever he's gone, Claudius is going to have a lot to answer for.
Adina felt a pang of sadness at the thought of her brother, at the thought of all his people waiting for him to return, not knowing that he was dead, and she felt a surge of rage at the gods who would allow a man like Elladin to die, while her brother Belgarin lived and forced an entire land of people to suffer because of his own greed. After a time, the anger passed, leaving her feeling empty and exhausted in its wake. She rose, walked to the cart, and removed her bedroll.
"I am going to go to sleep. Good night, everyone."
Aaron watched Peter stare after her, and despite the dim light of the fire, he could make out the boy's expression of embarrassed hurt. Despite himself, he felt sorry for the youth.
"Don't worry about it, kid," he said, surprising himself with the words. "She's had a long day."
The boy nodded silently, retrieved his own bedroll, and lay down.
"Are you going to get some rest, sir?" Grail asked beside him.
"Later."
They lapsed into silence, and Aaron sat, gazing at the fire as it whipped back and forth in the wind. Despite his best efforts to the contrary, his mind kept returning to Adina. The woman was damn bossy at times, no surprise that, and he'd lost count of the time she'd almost gotten him killed. But he had to admit that she had some backbone. What's more, despite the fact that she'd no doubt spent her years being pampered and sleeping in the finest beds, she hadn't complained once about sleeping on the hard, rocky ground. Suddenly a thought struck him, and he turned to the Chamberlain.
"Why didn't you leave, Grail?"
The Chamberlain started at the sound of the sellsword's voice.
"Sir, when Adina's other servants were brought out by Belgarin, why didn't you leave? For that matter, why didn't you take Belgarin's coin yourself?"
There was a pause. And when Grail spoke, he sounded angry for the first time Aaron had ever heard.
"I would never betray Her Highness."
He nodded.
"So why not just leave? I doubt Belgarin would have spared any trouble going after you."
"Because the princess needs me," Grail answered, as if it was the most obvious thing in the world.
"And starving people need food," Aaron said, thinking of Herb's daughter, Paula.
"But they don't always get it. You've got to know that the longer you hang around with her, the more likely it is that you'll be killed."
The Chamberlain didn't respond at first, and when he did, his voice was little more than a whisper.
"I'm scared. Of course I'm scared. I'm no warrior like you."
He took a deep, hitching breath.
"I'm a coward. But King Marcus, before he died, gods protect and keep him, once told me something that I'll never forget. He said, 'A man has a right to fear death, Grail, the same way he has a right to breathe, but if he has nothing that he'd be willing to face that fear for, to die for, then he's not really a man, but an empty shell and of no use to anyone. I know that the princess cares for her people, that she only wants to make the world better, and I pray to the gods each night to watch over her.'"
Aaron grunted. "I used to hear my father say something similar to my mother sometimes. It was the reason he followed Elladin, why he wanted to help him unite the whole of Tel Rir."
"Your father sounds like a wise man, sir."
Aaron hawked and spat.
"My father's dead. He and my mother were killed because he chose to follow the prince. No, my father wasn't wise. He was a fool. As for the gods, pray if you want, Grail. You aren't the first and you won't be the last. But you know something? People keep dying anyway. Sir,
the Chamberlain said with a frown. I really don't think...
Forget it, Aaron said, suddenly angry. I'm going to get some rest. Wake me when it's time for my watch.
He started toward his bedroll and turned back.
Oh, and Grile.
The Chamberlain blinked his eyes owlishly in the firelight.
Yes, sir?
You're not a coward. A fool may be, but not a coward.
Chapter 23 The next day passed uneventfully. They rose, ate in near silence, and got back on the trail. After a time, the road took them out of the forest and into hilly grassland that stretched on as far as Aaron could see. It rained that night. The sweeping fields offered no shelter. They got wet. They rose the next morning, all of them ill-tempered and out of sorts, except for Grile, who was, at least to Aaron's mind, annoyingly cheerful, constantly commenting on the fine autumn weather or the surprising comfort of the cart. It was on their third day in the grasslands, the fourth since leaving Herbs, that they topped a hill and first saw the dust cloud stirring behind them in the direction from which they'd came.
"What is it, do you think?" Edina asked.
"Someone else heading to the capital?"
"Could be," Aaron said, meeting her gaze meaningfully. "But I don't think so."
He turned to Peter. "How far from Baresh are we?" The youth turned away from the road, his face screwed up in concentration.
"We should make it to the capital around tomorrow night. No later than that. That is, if we don't stop at Naya's."
He smiled, apparently not noticing the worried expressions on the faces of the others.
"Naya's is a way stop for travellers, an inn of sorts. She makes the best sugared lemon tarts you'll ever have. It sure would be good to—"
"I don't think we'll be stopping," Aaron said, frowning back at the growing dust cloud. Whoever it was, they were travelling fast. It was nearly impossible to tell from this distance, but he thought that there were three, maybe four of them. According to the boy, they had a day and a half before they reached Baresh, a long time to ride in a rickety old cart. Too long. Whoever was following them, and despite what he wanted to think, it would be foolish to think the riders weren't following them, would be on them in the morning, midday at the least. A thought struck him, and he turned back to the pimple-faced youth.
"How far is this Naya's?"
Peter glanced up at the sky in thought.
"If we stop for the night at about the same time as we have been, we should reach it an hour or two after we start out in the morning."
He nodded. "All right, then. Keep going." Peter finally noticed their nervous expressions.
"Do you know who's behind us?"
"Better than I'd like to," Aaron said. "And if they catch us, so will you. Best keep going." They travelled on, speaking little. The youth didn't say anything, but based on the stiff whiteness of his hands where they gripped the reins, and the punishing pace he was putting the mules to, he'd apparently decided that while eyeballing the princess's goods was an enjoyable pastime, breathing was an even better one. In the afternoon, they crested another large grassy hill. Aaron looked back and spat in frustration. Despite the cart's increased pace, the riders had got closer. A lot closer.
"Bastards must be killing their horses," he muttered.
"All right, lad. Let's slow it down some."
"Slow it down?" Edina asked incredulously. "Are you crazy? They'll catch us."
He shook his head.
"Not tonight, they won't."
"And after that?" Edina asked.
"You heard Peter. We won't get to Baresh until tomorrow night."
Ignoring her, Aaron turned to the youth.
"You want to make it home to your family, boy?"
Redhead's face was pale, his eyes wide with fear. He swallowed hard and nodded.
"Yes, sir."
"All right, then. Slow it down. Give the animals a chance to catch a breath. It won't do us any good to run them to death." Peter stared at him with those wide, terrified eyes.
"Are they going to catch us, sir?"
Aaron glanced behind them again.
"Probably."
He turned back to the terrified youth.
"Relax, boy. Just do as I tell you, and we might just get out of this with our guts in place."
The boy nodded and eased the pace of the mules. Edina shook her head in awe.
"You're out of your mind."
He felt for the handle of the sword at his back, ensuring himself it was there, then turned to her, a grim smile on his face.
"You have no idea."
Chapter 24
He had Peter push the mules past the time when they normally would have stopped. They went on until the nearly full moon hung in the sky, bright and pregnant, until he judged the men no more than a couple of hours behind them. Then he ordered the youth to stop the cart.
"What is it?" Adina asked, and though she masked it well, he could hear the fear in her voice.
"Aren't we going to keep going?" Aaron climbed out of the cart and took a moment to stretch his aching muscles, wrapping his cloak around him for what little protection it would afford him against the growing cold. He turned to Adina and nodded.
"You are."
Realization dawned in her blue eyes, and they seemed to sparkle in the moonlight.
"You can't be serious. You don't know how many there are."
"I think I may. Besides," he said, shrugging, "does it matter?"
"But why?"
"You don't care about us. You've made that clear," she said, her voice a mixture of anger and hurt. "Why would you risk yourself?"
"Look, we don't have time for this," Aaron said, feeling precious seconds slip by. "We both know what those men want, what they'll do. Now we can sit around here arguing about this until they slit our throats, or you can get moving."
"No," she said, shaking her head. "It's not right." He barked a harsh laugh.
"Nothing is." He took in the princess's angry, worried face and sighed.
"Look, relax. It's probably just a scouting party. Two or three men, four at most. Besides, I don't plan on letting myself get ghosted just yet. Not until I get paid, anyway."
He turned to Grile. The Chamberlain's face had paled visibly, and he was rubbing his hands together anxiously.
"You keep going until you reach Naya's. If I'm not there by first light, you and the others rush to Baresh like the Keeper himself is on your tail. Because he is."
Grile was shaking his head before Aaron was finished.
"We can't leave you, sir. It wouldn't be..."
"Listen," Aaron said. "We can either wait for them to run us down tomorrow morning, like fucking animals, or you can do what I tell you and maybe we can survive. You do want your mistress to survive, don't you, Grile?"
The Chamberlain nodded slowly.
"Of course, sir, but..."
"No buts," Aaron said, as he withdrew one of his blades and offered it to the Chamberlain.
"Here, take this."
He met the man's eyes.
"Run if you can, but if it comes to it, use it."
Grile eyed the blade askance, as if its touch was poison.
I don't think..." The Chamberlain let out a squeak of surprise as Aaron grabbed a handful of his shirt and jerked him closer.
"You're not a coward, remember?"
Grile's mouth worked silently for a moment.
Yes, sir.
Aaron watched him for several seconds, then nodded, satisfied.
"Good. Remember, first light. Not a minute more."
"First light," the Chamberlain repeated.
"No," Adina said. "We're not going to leave you alone."
Aaron frowned, rubbing his chilled hands together.
"No. Better that we all die together. Better that we leave all of Elladin's people to their fate. Is that it? With no one to stop him, Belgaren will be king. And I guess that'll be the end of it, huh, princess? Hundreds, maybe thousands die in the Quelling, all because you felt left out."
"Princess?" the youth asked, but neither of them paid him any attention.
"You bastard," Adina said furiously.
"Fine, get yourself killed. Do what you want. What do I care?"
He shrugged.
"You'll have to do better than that, princess. Bastard's what my friends call me."
He turned to the youth. "Now go as fast as you can, but be safe. Now's not the time to break one of the mule's legs by leading them into a hole."
Without a word, the boy barked a command to the mules, and the cart lurched into motion. Aaron watched them go, Adina staring at him with a strange look on her face, Grile still gawking at the blade like it was going to bite him. He kept watching until they disappeared over another hill. Then he sighed and glanced back in the direction they'd come. In the wake of the receding cart, the night was eerily silent and still. It was as if the whole world waited on him. It was also cold, bone-chilling, goosebump-raising cold. On a night like this, a man would be more worried about staying warm than anyone coming up on him in the dark, or so he hoped. He wrapped his cloak tightly around him, the tattered cloth providing meager shelter against the stinging wind, but it was better than nothing, and started down the road. It wasn't long before he could make out the orange glow of a fire in the distance.
Grunting in satisfaction, he headed toward it. "This is a very stupid idea," Ko said in his mind.
"You're as bad as the princess," he muttered.
"I'll take that as a compliment." He sniffed and brushed an arm across his nose that felt like a chunk of ice.
"Take it how you want. It doesn't matter to me. But let me ask you a question, Firefly. You think a hunter ever wonders what the deer is thinking?"
There was a pause, then reluctantly, "No."
"Neither do I," he said, struggling to keep his teeth from chattering, "because he's the hunter. His job's killing, and the deer's job is dying, right?"
"That is a rather crude way of putting it, but I suppose. Is there a point to this?"
"My point, Lightning Bug, is that to these men, we're the deer. Men don't have a lot of expectations of their prey. They expect them to be scared, to run, to hide, and eventually to die. What they don't expect is for them to sneak up on them while they sleep and slit their fucking throats."
"And what if there are more than you expect?"
He shrugged as he continued forward into the howling wind. "Then we'll be at it all night. What the pit else do we have to do?"
Chapter 25. He walked for what felt like an eternity. The fire was little more than a dull orange glow on the horizon, and his fingers and toes felt frozen. But he bared his teeth and pushed on, the wind and the cold cutting through his clothes like blades made of ice. After a time, he was close enough to see the shape of the flickering fire. The flame whipped back and forth in the wind, as if performing some ritualistic dance reminiscent of the days when the world was still young, back in a time when fire was man's only ward against the darkness, against the things that waited in the shadows. He didn't know how long he stood, watching it, a frozen revenant who'd forgotten what it was to be warm. Then he caught himself and shook his head as if to clear it.
"Damn cold must be getting to me."
Jerking his attention away from the mesmerizing flame, he stalked closer, wincing at the crunch of the frost-laden grass beneath his feet. As he drew nearer, he could just make out the shadowy forms of two men lying in the darkness. Two horses had been staked to the ground nearby, their ears perked up at his approach, but they appeared exhausted, and they made no noise. "Two," he thought. "Two, at least." Some men would have moved in then, satisfied that there were only two. But not him. There were plenty of fools living in the world, but there were a lot more dead ones. Instead of giving in to the temptation to get it over, to get it done, he waited. In the cold, in the darkness, he waited. He might have stood there for minutes or hours. In the darkness and the cold, he lost all track of time. He waited, the darkness wrapped around him like a cloak, schooling his breathing and listening to the steady pop and snap of the fire, scanning the fields to see if some other hunter shared the night with him. When he was finally satisfied that there were only the two and decided to move forward, his knees protested painfully, and small shivers ran through his body. He crept around the shadow of the camp, forcing his numb legs to move, until he stood above one of the men. This close, he could see that the cloak the man had wrapped himself in before he went to sleep was a deep crimson, and despite the accumulated dust on it, the golden slashes on the cloth were still visible. He sighed silently to himself. They were colors that brought out shouts of pride and cheers of joy from some men, while sending others scurrying into their homes like rats trying to outrun a flood. They were Belgarin's colors. Belgarin's men. He glanced back at the other, ensuring himself the man still slept. He wondered idly how the prince had found out that they had traveled north, but pushed the thought aside for later. There were things that he needed to be about just now. Silently, he knelt down, drawing his remaining blade. As he did, the soldier rolled over in his sleep so that he was facing toward the sky, toward Aaron. The flickering firelight revealed the face of a youth that was certainly no more than a year or two older than the boy, Peter, if that. It was probably the boy's first outing, the first time he was trusted with anything more than cleaning the latrines and mopping up after the real soldiers. Scouting duty, if that's what this was, and judging by the fact that there were only two of them, Aaron was confident in that assumption, was one of the most hated tasks of enlisted men. 9 out of 10 times, it was a complete waste, and more often than not, you returned with nothing to show for the trip except for a saddle-sore ass and a desperate need for a bath. The veterans had probably done everything they could to avoid it. But not this one. No, this one would have volunteered readily, excited to become more than just the errand boy around camp, excited to prove himself, as well as the others, that he was a soldier in his own right. Yeah. 9 out of 10 times, the boy would have made it back to camp, empty-handed. Empty-handed, but safe. No doubt, even now, there were men scouting in all directions from the town of Krace, finding nothing and grumbling themselves to sleep. But not this one. No. Not this unlucky bastard, who was still young enough, still stupid enough, to think life was a fairy tale, and that he, unlike everyone else, was immune to the keeper's call. Aaron raised the blade above the boy's throat and positioned the other hand so that he could keep the sleeping man's mouth shut as he bled out. It was a damn messy job. He knew this from experience, but he couldn't risk waking the other. Not yet. He was just about to open the young soldier's throat when something about the youth's features struck him as familiar, and he hesitated. For a moment, he couldn't think of what it could have been that had triggered the feeling. But then he knew. The boy's nose was thin and canted to the side where it had obviously been broken. It looked exactly the same as Owen's had so many years ago. Owen had gotten his broken nose from his abusive drunken father, and ever since then it had held the same crook. That was, before the old man decided to take on a bottle of poison in a game of chicken. The poison won. Death always did. Aaron couldn't help wondering where this boy had gotten his. "What in the name of the gods is wrong with me?" he thought angrily. "Sooner started, sooner done." He leaned forward and brought the blade within an inch of the youth's throat. There was a rustle at his side, and he whipped his head around, sure that the other soldier was bearing down on him. Instead, he saw that the man had only rolled over in his sleep. Satisfied, he turned back and saw that the boy was staring at him with wide, terrified green eyes. A green he knew well. "Owen?" he whispered, dumbfounded. "It can't be." "Please," the soldier pleaded in a whiny child's voice. "Don't." Aaron felt his arms break out in goose flesh. He blinked once, then twice, and stared back at the soldier. "Owen, you know I'd never—" "Wait," he thought. "Just wait a damn minute. Owen would be older than this." With that thought, suddenly his vision seemed to clear. This man wasn't Owen. His ears were small. Owen's ears had been massive, much too big for his face. And this man's hair was black, whereas his childhood friend's had been a brown so light it was almost blonde. It had been nothing but his mind playing tricks. He must have been more tired than he'd realized. Still, the look of terror on the boy's face filled him with a nagging sense of shame. "Why the fuck should I feel guilty? I wasn't the one chasing him."
"You were chasing me," Aaron whispered.
"I was ordered to," the boy whimpered, his bottom lip quivering. I wouldn't have hurt you. Please don't kill me." Irritated at himself, Aaron realized something. Despite the fact that he knew it was foolishness, he couldn't kill the boy. Not now. Not with those stupid green eyes pleading, begging him to stay his hand. He was a sellsword after all, not a monster. "I'm not going to kill you, kid," he whispered, cursing himself in his head as he did. "Not this time. But don't you let me see you again. The next time, you'll suffer before I bleed you out. You understand?" The boy's head jerked in a tight nod.
"Yes, sir, of course."
Aaron grunted quietly as he rose, his breath pluming out into the cold night air and vanishing like a dream. He sheathed his blade and pulled the hood of his cloak back over his head. "Go to sleep, boy. Go to sleep, and this'll be all gone when you wake up. Nothing but a nightmare on a night made for them."
"Yes, sir. Thank you, sir," the boy stammered.
Aaron only stared at him until the youth swallowed hard and closed his eyes. "You're making me soft, Firefly," he thought wearily as he turned. "Too damn soft." He'd taken no more than 2 steps when he heard the telltale rustle behind him.
"Damn it," he hissed.
He lunged to the side, and it was this desperate burst of action that saved his life.
Instead of taking him in the base of the brainstem, the blade plunged deep into his shoulder. He bellowed as pain lanced through his body, fierce and jagged and hot. He whipped around to see the boy stumbling away from him, his eyes wide. The youth's hands were covered in blood. His blood.
"You stupid bastard,"
Aaron said in disbelief, lurching toward the boy on suddenly unsteady feet.
"I got him, Carl! Carl, wake up! I got him!"
the boy shouted, his voice cracking. His eyes were wild as he stumbled back another step, his hands out in front of him as if to keep the cell sword at bay.
"Huh?"
a gruff voice, thick with sleep, asked from the other shadowed bundle.
"I got him,"
the boy repeated, and although his voice was full of fear, Aaron could hear the pride in it. He stumbled toward the boy, swaying drunkenly as the pain ripped through him. If the other man came fully awake and came from behind him, Aaron knew he was finished. He growled in frustration and took another halting, excruciating step. The youth, his eyes locked on Aaron, wasn't paying attention to what was behind him as he shuffled backward. His foot snagged on his bedroll, and he let out a yelp of surprise as his legs came out from under him. He was still wrestling with the covers, trying to get himself untangled, when Aaron dove on top of him. The boy cried out in panic, wriggling in Aaron's grip like an eel, but Aaron grabbed a handful of the youth's hair in one hand, his chin in the other, and let out a growl of fury and pain as he wrenched the youth's head to the side. There was a crack as the boy's neck snapped, and his eyes opened so wide that they looked as if they would pop from the strain. He sputtered and choked, struggling and failing to draw a breath. Aaron turned away from the youth's look of horror, hating himself, as he tore the boy's weakly pawing hands off his shirt. With a grunt of effort, he pulled himself to his feet in time to see the other soldier, a man who looked to be in his early 40s with a brown beard specked with grey, staring at him in shock.
You killed him, the man said. You killed the lad.
Aaron felt at his left shoulder gingerly, and discovered that the knife the boy had used was still in him. Blood loss was making him lightheaded, and he knew that if he passed out with this man still alive, he'd never wake up again.
Yeah, I killed him, he gasped, a deep self-loathing settling over him. Now are you just going to stand there like a fucking idiot, or are you going to do something about it?
The man growled and drew a knife from his belt that was twice the size of the one sticking out of Aaron's shoulder.
Oh, I'll do something about it, you son of a bitch, he snarled as he started closer.
The soldier was nearly twice Aaron's size, but he consoled himself with the fact that in his current weakened state, he'd barely be able to overpower a child in hand-to-hand combat anyway. It didn't help. Gritting his teeth, he gripped the handle of the blade in his shoulder and tore it free. There was a sickening, sucking sound as it came loose, and the fresh blood blossomed out of the wound. Breathing in rasping grunts, Aaron stumbled awkwardly, barely keeping his feet as a wave of dizziness swept over him. The older soldier grinned cruelly.
You'll suffer for what you've done to the boy. I'll see to it.
Come on, then, Aaron said, trying unsuccessfully to blink away the darkness at the corners of his vision. The man let out a snarl of rage and rushed forward. Aaron tried to dodge the soldier's first strike, but the man was a skilled fighter, and Aaron's wound made him too slow. The knife cut across his side, and he bellowed in pain, nearly losing his footing on one of the dead boy's legs as he reeled away. The soldier was on him in an instant, swinging the knife in vicious cuts and stabs. Aaron put all his dwindling energy into avoiding the strikes, giving no thought to attempting any counterattacks with his own blood-smeared blade. He managed to kick the man away, and grimaced as he pressed his unarmed hand to a fresh cut across his stomach.
This isn't working, he thought resignedly. He'll have me soon.
I am blocking what I can, Ko said in his mind. Her voice sounded strained, tired. He'd figured as much. Without the virtue's help, he was certain that he'd have lost consciousness minutes ago. But magical flying orb or no, the loss of blood was making him disoriented and slow, and it would only be moments before the soldier managed to close the distance and get in a strike that Aaron wouldn't walk away from. The grizzled man circled him, a hungry expression on his face. He feinted with the knife, and Aaron lurched to the side in a desperate attempt to dodge a thrust that never came. The soldier smiled a cruel smile.
Not much good when your opponent's awake, are you, sellsword?
Aaron set his jaw with grim determination. "Are you going to sit there and talk, or are we going to get this done?" The man nodded. "All right then, bastard. Say hello to the keeper from me." Then he rushed forward, swinging his knife in a vicious arc. Instead of trying to evade the blow, the sellsword stepped into it, throwing his forearm in the way of the oncoming blade. He bellowed in pain as the sharp steel plunged deep into his arm and struck bone. With a savage snarl, he called on what little strength he had left, lunging forward and slamming his own knife up and into the man's gut. The soldier let out a grunt of surprise as the steel sheared through his flesh. He gave a jerk on the blade in Aaron's forearm, trying to pull it free. Aaron cried out as the knife dug at the bone in his arm, but it was stuck fast and did not come out. He took another step closer to the man, growling, his eyes wild and feral, then ripped his knife free and slammed it into the man's stomach again. The soldier gasped and took a step back, his eyes wide with shock and a dawning fear. Aaron pursued him forward, plunging the knife home again and again, paying no attention to the blood splattering him. A few more strikes, and the man's legs gave out from under him, and he crumpled to the ground. Aaron followed him to the ground, bringing the blade down again and again. The knife pistoned up and down, blood fountaining out, nearly black in the firelight. For a time, he was aware of nothing except the feel of it on his hands and face, warm enough to be almost hot, and the rhythmic push and pull of the blade. By the time he came to a panting stop, his good arm was aching fiercely, though the pain paled in comparison to the wounds in his shoulder and forearm. He let the knife fall free of his numb fingers onto the crimson-stained grass. For several seconds he sat there, trying to get a handle on the pain that raged through him. Then he took a deep breath and started to his feet. Before he was halfway up, the darkness which had been creeping into the edges of his vision surged forward as if with a mind of its own, and he crumpled to the ground under the weight of it. "This is how it ends," he thought. And then there was the darkness, and nothing but the darkness. Chapter 26. He floated in a sea of darkness, on waves of darkness, and it was all right. Soon he knew he would sink beneath those waves, would fall into the still greater darkness waiting beneath, and that was all right too. There was no pain there, no hunger or thirst, only the darkness. That and nothing more.
"Up, Aaron! You have to get up now!"
The words sounded strange, as if they were coming from some great distance, from some small, unremembered place, and he thought he could just make out some light in the distance, a weak, flickering thing that the darkness had not yet touched, had not yet consumed. But it would. He knew that now. He always did. A man could light his candles, could lock his windows against the night, and huddle beneath the covers like a child. Yet it still came. And when it did, there was no denying it. If a man was living, he was dying. "Go away," he thought to the voice. "Leave me alone. I'm dying, can't you see that? Why won't you just leave me alone?" The voice said something else, but it was farther away now, quieter and weaker, and he couldn't make out the words. That was all right. He couldn't remember what it wanted, but that was all right too.
"You'll die if you don't get up now!"
He winced inwardly at the frantic, screeching sound of the voice. "Don't you get it?" he thought, trying to make the owner of the voice understand the uselessness of it all. "I'm done. I've been done for a while, I think. And what does it matter? Men plan, and the worms feast. It's the way it's always been. And what's left for me there anyway? Pain, that's all. More pain than you can imagine." "I can imagine it," the voice replied. "You're not the only one that feels pain. I think you've forgotten that somewhere. Life is pain, but that's not all it is." "Oh," he thought, wishing the voice would just go away. "Could have fooled me." "No," the voice answered sadly, and this time it sounded as if it spoke directly into his ear. "Life is joy, too. You do remember joy, don't you?"
He started to say no. No, he couldn't remember Joy. But stopped, as a vision unfolded before him. No. Not a vision. A memory. A small boy sat atop the stairs of his home, looking between the wooden railings to the room beneath, where his mother and father danced, unaware of their audience. There was no instrument playing, no singer to accompany their movements, but if they noticed the lack, they did not show it. The woman laid her hand on the man's shoulder, and they held each other close. And they danced. "That's it," the voice said reassuringly. "You remember?"
"I remember nothing," Aaron thought back, turning away from the terrible, wonderful memory, turning back to the darkness. "I don't know that boy."
"But you do," the voice countered. "It's you, Aaron. The boy's you."
"I'm telling you, I don't know him, damn it!"
"What of loyalty, Aaron? Do you know nothing of it as well?" Another vision appeared in front of him, faint at first, but growing, until he wasn't looking at it anymore, but experiencing it. He was in a massive room, a cafeteria, it appeared. The tables were filled with young boys and girls with bowls of some gruel in front of them. They ate soundlessly, their eyes locked on their own bowls as they shoveled food in their mouths mechanically. Somehow, the place seemed familiar to him, and for a reason he didn't understand, he was glad that they were silent. Here, in this place, it was important to be quiet, to be still, to not be noticed. All of the kids turned, and he felt his own heart lurch in his chest as the main doors of the cafeteria burst open. He cringed inwardly as Headmaster Cyril marched in, a wicked familiar switch in his hand.
"Who dared to do it?"
the man screeched, his face crimson, his eyes wild with anger as they swept the room.
"Which of you ungrateful ingrates dared?"
The boys and the girls cowered in their seats, and Aaron, like them, wished that he could disappear. He desired only for whatever was about to happen to be over, so that they could keep living. Living wasn't much to any of them, not in that place. One only had to look at the vacant, dead gazes of the girls, or the careful, shaking movements of many of the boys, to know that. But it was all they had, all that hadn't yet been taken from them.
"Answer me, you stupid little bastards!"
the man screamed, his hands knotted into tight, pale fists at his side.
"Or I will make every last one of you suffer. Do you understand me?"
Silence reigned, thick and pregnant with dreaded expectation. The old man turned to the nearest child, a 9-year-old girl with soft, doll-like features, and blonde hair so fine it seemed to flow around her face like rain, and brought the switch savagely across her face. The girl let out a cry of pain as her nose snapped beneath the taut wood, and she was flung out of her seat. She landed on the floor with a thump, her hands covering her broken nose as she sobbed in desperate, keening whimpers. The man took a step toward her and brought the switch up again.
"I know who it was,"
a voice squeaked. The gray-haired man stopped in mid-swing and whipped around to the young boy who had spoken.
"What did you say, Thomas?"
he asked, his voice suddenly deceptively sweet.
"Please go on, my boy. Tell me again. I will not hurt any of you any more. I just want to know who did it, that's all. A boy or girl like that, well, they could ruin things for all of us, don't you understand?"
Somehow, though, he knew he wasn't there. Aaron could smell the sharp, acrid tang of the tamarang herb floating around the man, and he knew that the man's words, like the place itself, were a lie.
It was Aaron, the boy stammered. "Please, sir, please don't hit her any more. It was Aaron Envelar."
"Are you sure, Thomas? You wouldn't lie to me, would you?" he asked, his voice little more than a whisper.
"Of course not, Master Cyril. It was him. He did it."
"No, he didn't,"
a new voice said. The headmaster turned to the other boy who'd spoken. The boy's hair was so light it was almost brown, and his nose was bent to the side from a past break that had never healed right.
"It wasn't Aaron, sir. It was me."
"You?" the headmaster asked, surprised. "Owen, it was you?"
The boy's eyes were wide with fear, but he nodded, and when he spoke, his voice was determined.
"Yes, sir.
I did it. I'm sorry, but I did.
The headmaster said, shaking his head. And after all I've done for you... He gestured expansively across the room with the switch. After all I've done for all of you, this is the thanks I get. Well, we will just see about that. The boy trembled as the old man started toward him, but he did not cry out or beg as the headmaster grabbed him by the collar and drug him out of the cafeteria, slamming the doors behind him. Once the doors were closed, the kids did not speak. They all liked Owen, but what could they do? It was better not to speak of it, to forget it, to keep on living. They turned back to their food and ate. You had to eat to live. In some distant place, Aaron felt a tear slide its way down his cheek. I didn't mean it, he thought. I didn't mean it. Why did he do it? Why? It should have been me. What of loyalty, Aaron? The voice asked as if he'd never spoken. Do you remember loyalty?
No, he cried soundlessly. Don't you see? They are all dead. My parents, Owen, all of them dead. There is nothing in the world but pain and waiting for the pain to stop.
You're wrong, Aaron, the voice said sadly.
Stop saying my name. You don't know me.
I know you, Aaron Envelar. I know you better than you know yourself. What of love? Does love mean nothing?
Stop it, he begged. Leave me alone.
But the voice did not. Instead, a series of visions flitted through his mind in rapid succession. Visions of a woman with dark brown hair and eyes so fiercely blue that they seemed to burn with it. A woman that waited on the docks when he would have ran. A woman who hesitated with a blade when he would have struck. The same woman who had come to him at the inn, despite all of his cruelty, to let him know that she cared. Adina, he thought. Her name is Adina. Yes. Suddenly the darkness that surrounded him, gathered and waiting, seemed abhorrent, greasy, and cloying. He shook himself free of it the way a drowning man might struggle against the pressing water, with a desperate, frantic determination. When he'd given everything that he had, when he was convinced that it wouldn't be enough, his eyes flitted open, and he winced at the brightness of the fire.
Co? He croaked.
I am here, Aaron, the virtue answered, the relief clear in her voice. He gingerly felt the wound in his shoulder. The flow of blood had lessened, but it had not stopped. With a monumentous effort, and despite his body's protests, he managed to struggle to a sitting position. He rested there for a second, his head spinning, his eyes struggling to focus. Then, he took a deep breath and tore a piece from his tattered bloody shirt, a task made almost impossible with one working arm, looped it around the wound, and grunted in pain as he pulled it tight. He waited another moment, then tried to push himself to his feet. He was sure that he wouldn't make it, that he would fall, that his eyes would close for a final time, and that would be the end of it. It was with some surprise, then, that he realized with a shock that he was standing. He was swaying drunkenly, in danger of tipping over at any moment, but he was standing. All right, then, he thought, as he fought off a fresh wave of dizziness. All right. He wondered as he closed his eyes and took a slow, steadying breath, how much worse the pain would be if Co wasn't there to lessen it. Too much, he thought. Far too much. He glanced at the fire and saw that it was burning low, almost burned out. But not dead, he thought fiercely. Not yet. He stumbled toward one of the soldier's horses, and after the third try, managed to scramble into the saddle. The horse let out a neigh of displeasure as he tugged on its lead. Come on then, boy, he said, turning the beast toward the road, toward Nyers and the others. We don't want to keep them waiting. Chapter 27 Adina rose from her seat near the fire and peered out the window for what must have been the 100th time. Outside, the darkness huddled around Naya's small waystop, and Adina felt a deep foreboding settle over her. There was still no sign of Aaron. Grael stood by another of the building's windows, wringing his hands nervously, his gaze locked on the pale moon. He dreads the sun,
she thought sadly. Dreads the moment when those first rays of light